On this 10th day of July, 2011, in Toronto, Canada, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 13, Indra, Afflicted by Sinful Reaction, Text 4-9. Sri Shuka Uvacha, Vritra Vikrama Samvigna. I'm sorry, I guess you have 9. Okay, I'll read the first 5 in a row when you will make 9. Vritra Vikrama Samvigna Sarve Deva Saharshibihi Tadvadhyatayan Indram Naichad Bito Brahadmadat. Sri Shukadev Goswami answered, when all the great sages and demigods were disturbed by the extraordinary power of Vritrasura, they had assembled to ask Indra to kill him. Indra, however, being afraid of killing a Brahman, declined their request. Indra Vacha, Shri Bhu Drumajalar Eno Vishwarupa Vadhodbhavam Vibhaktam Anagrinad Bhir Vritra Hatyam Famarmjaham. King Indra replied, when I killed Vishwarup, I received extensive sinful reactions, but I was favored by the women, land, trees, and water, and therefore I was able to divide the sin among them. But now, if I kill Vritrasura, another Brahman, how shall I free myself from the sinful reactions? Sri Shuka Uvacha, Rishiyas tad pakarnya mahendram idam abruvan yajayishyama badram te hayamedhe namasma bhai. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, hearing this, the great sages replied to King Indra, O King of Heaven, all good fortune unto you. Do not fear, we shall perform an Ashvamedha sacrifice to release you from any sin you may accrue by killing the Brahman. Text 7. Hayamedhena Purusham Panamatmanam Ishwaram Istva Narayanam Devam Mokshase Pi Jagat Vadhat. The rishis continued, O King Indra, by performing an Ashvamedha sacrifice and thereby pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supersoul, Lord Narayan, the Supreme Controller, one can be relieved even of the sinful reactions for killing the entire world, what to speak of killing a demon like Vritrasura. Text number 8. You can chant responsively. Brahmaha Pitraha Gogno Matraha Chayaha Gavan Svadak Pulkashako Vapi Shuddhiran Yasya Kirtanat. One who has killed a Brahman, one who has killed a cow, or one who has killed his father, mother, or spiritual master can be immediately freed from all sinful reactions simply by chanting the holy name of Lord Narayan. Other sinful persons, such as dog-eaters and chandalas, who are less than shudras, can also be freed in this way. But you are a devotee, and we shall keep you, and we shall help you by performing the great horse sacrifice. If you please Lord Narayan in that way, why should you be afraid? You will be freed even if you kill the entire universe, including the Brahmins, what to speak of killing a disturbing demon like Vritrasura. Report. It is said in the Brihad Vishnu Puran, Namno hi yavati shakti papa niharane hadehi tavat kartum nashaknoti patakam pataki naraha. Also in the Prema Vivata by Jagadananda Pandit, it is said, Eka Krishna name papira yata papa kroi bahu janme se papi karate naroi. This means that by once chanting the holy name of the Lord, one can be freed from the reactions of more sins than he can even imagine performing. That's the first verse. Namno hi yavati shakti. The holy name is so spiritually potent that simply by chanting the holy name, one can be freed from the reactions to all sinful activities. That's the second name, second verse. What then is to be said of those who chant the holy name regularly or worship the deity regularly? For such purified devotees, freedom from sinful reaction is certainly assured. This does not mean, however, that one should intentionally commit sinful acts and think himself free from the reactions because he is chanting the holy name. Such a mentality is a most abominable offense at the lotus feet of the holy name. Namno balad yasa hi papa buddhi. The Lord's holy name certainly has the potency to neutralize all sinful activities. But if one repeatedly and intentionally commits sins while chanting the holy name, he is most condemned. These verses name the performers of various sinful deeds. In the Mana Sanghita, the following names are given: a son begotten by a Brahmin and born from the womb of a Shudra mother is called a Parashava or Nishada, a hunter accustomed to stealing. A son begotten by a Nishada in the womb of a Shudra woman is called a Pukkasha. A child begotten by a Kshatriya in the womb of the daughter of a Shudra is called an Ugra. A child begotten by a Shudra in the womb of the daughter of a Kshatriya is called a Chatta. A child begotten by a Kshatriya in the womb of a lower class woman is called a Shvada, or dog eater. All such offspring are considered extremely sinful, but the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so strong that all of them can be purified simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. The Hare Krishna movement offers everyone a chance to be purified, regardless of birth or family. As confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.18, Kirato hunanda pulinda pulkasha abhira shumba yavanaka shadayaha yenyecha papa yadapashriya shriya shudyanti tasmai prabhavishnave namaha. Kiratas, hunas, andras, pulindas, pulkashas, abhiras, shumbas, yavanas, members of the Kassa races, and even others addicted to sinful acts can be purified by taking shelter of devotees of the Lord. For the Lord is the supreme power. I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto him. Even such sinful persons can certainly all be purified if they chant the holy name of the Lord under the direction of a pure devotee. Herein, the sages encourage King Indra to kill Vritrasura, even at the risk of a Brahmahatya, the killing of a Brahmin, and they guarantee to release him from sinful reactions by performing an Ashvamedha Yajna. Such purposefully devised atonement, however, cannot relieve the performer of sinful acts. This will be seen from the following verse. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnanandana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmidatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, here we have the very important statement in this verse that one can be freed of the most grievous sins just by chanting the name of the Lord. That's the essential instruction here, as repeated in the purport. Now, it's very clear if you read the Nectar of Devotion, one of the first instructions there. Nectar of Devotion is the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu of Srila Rupa Goswami, translated and commented upon by Srila Prabhupada. And there he gives, right at the beginning, the six benefits of practicing Bhakti Yoga. And the first benefit is that all one's suffering is mitigated. And in the explanation of that benefit, it's described how suffering occurs. Why do we suffer in this world? And the result is, it is a result of what we call sinful activities, or activities against the laws of God, the laws of nature. And the sin is committed due to ignorance. So the root cause of suffering is ignorance and activity in that ignorance. Now what happens when you perform some sinful activity? Suppose you kill a Brahmin like that. This is horrific, you know, unimaginable sin. Excuse me. Hare Krishna. Putting a lot of strain on the voice these days. Hare Krishna. So what happens, now you may think you get away with it, right? Suppose you do it in secret, nobody sees you, you don't get caught. But we know there are so many witnesses. Supasol, the sun, the moon, the air, the higher powers know. It's in the record. It's in your record. And what happens is that it plants a sinful reaction seed called a bija. Nothing may happen right away, right? You just go on living. But that seed is there. And eventually, it fructifies. And just before it fructifies, it's called a prarabdha karma. That karma, or sinful karma in this case, which has not yet fructified. But then at a certain point, it may be his next birth, or it may be in this birth, it fructifies, giving the poison fruit of your sinful reaction in the form of some great suffering. Maybe you get killed, maybe your child gets killed, something horrific that causes you tremendous pain. So this is how sinful reactions work. Now, another thing that happens when you perform, suppose you just become a drunkard, you know, or nobody's born a drunkard, but at a certain point, by bad association, you take that first drink, right? And what happens when you take that first drink? There's some pleasure there. Otherwise, people wouldn't drink. Something, change of consciousness, whatever. So that plants a desire seed. That's called kuta, the subtle desire to do the thing again. And as well, there's the sinful reaction seed. So you see, you have this cycle. Because once you do it once, you may do it again and again and again. And before you know it, you're in a sinful frame of mind and you're really in trouble. But you haven't yet received all, you know, these sinful reactions. I mean, it's happening all the time. I remember when I was young, man, had no idea of any of this. I didn't even believe in God, but, you know, what to speak of Vedic literature. So, you know, I performed various drinking, smoking, things like that, carousing. And you wouldn't think twice about it. That's what we do. You know, you think, I am constitutionally young, and these people are constitutionally middle-aged, and there's some constitutionally old people. I'll be young forever, they'll be middle-aged forever, and they'll be old forever. This is the way you actually act. You know, you're not projecting yourself into the point where you're old and you're gonna, you know, you broke down your health because of sinful activity. This is why they have to put these images on the cigarette packs to try to break through the brain of the illusion soul that you do this, you just spent $6 for this pack of cigarettes, now you're gonna smoke it, and here's what's gonna result be. So the pain is there for buying the cigarette, and it's a big financial drain. And then down the road, this is a result, emphysema or cancer or something like that. Trying to give knowledge, you see, the root is ignorance. Trying to give knowledge to someone so they'll avoid the sin. Now, it's very paradoxical. There's a pack of cigarettes there and they're trying to tell you, you know, why not just outlaw cigarettes? They're so harmful. Oh no, there's so much money to be made, you know. So the demoniac society is working at cross purposes. But the point I'm making is that there is a train. As soon as you commit some act, now it works on the good side too. If you help somebody, if you give charity, if you're a kind person and you're giving, that also comes back to you. You may not see it right away, right? The only thing you see is you just gave $1,000 for education, and now you're poorer. So in that way, you're suffering. But that's a slight thing, and then in the future you'll gain so much benefit from that good act. So it works both ways. So Indra, in this case, Indra had killed two Brahmins. Now he killed two Brahmins. The first one was Vishwarup. Vishwarup was a surrogate spiritual master that was provided because he had offended his original spiritual master, Brihaspati. And he was nowhere to be found. So in the Vedic culture, it's understood that if you don't get the blessings of your guru, then you're going to be in trouble. You're going to lose your power. You're going to lose... it's a very dangerous situation. So the demigods were in a panic-stricken state, and they were suffering because the demons were taking over their kingdoms, their planets. So they needed a spiritual master to revere. So Vishnu took that role. But he had some loyalty to the demons. He had that on his mother's side. There was some descent. So he's also offering some worship to the demons. Indra didn't like that. And he lost his temper. And he cut off his heads. And Horrible. A horrible offense. What could be worse than that? So that now he's killed Vishwarup. Now he explains here that he was able to offload those sinful reactions. There's a way that if someone can accept your sinful reactions. So he did that. We won't get into detail with described in that one of these verses here. When I killed Vishwarup, I received extensive sinful reactions, but I was favored by women, land, trees, and water, and therefore I was able to divide them. So each of those elements, they went through some negativity, and they took the sinful reaction. So he was freed. But now, again, this Vritrasura, asura means demon, but he's not really a demon. He's a demon outside, but a devotee inside. And he's a Brahmin in two ways, as I explained. He's the son, or offspring, if you will, of Tvashta, who's a great Brahmin. And he's also a devotee. He's a Vaishnava. So now he's just killed a Vaishnav, and he's worried he's going to get more sinful reactions. Now, the interesting thing here is that the other demigods, they encourage him. Say, don't worry. Just by chanting the name of Lord Narayan, you'll be free from sinful reactions. But we'll perform an Ashvamedha sacrifice for you, and in this way we relieve you of sin. So you get the impression that if Indra had just taken that instruction and just chanted Hare Krishna, he would be free. But he didn't. He waited for them to perform the Ashvamedha. They did, but it didn't do the trick. He had sinful reaction personified chasing him. A tubercular woman with blood streaming out. You know, he's chasing him, and he had to hide in this lake, Manasarovar. So back to the real essence of this, why this is important for us. Now, living in this world, unless we're raised from childhood in devotee families, in strict devotee families, and we're not performing any gross sinful activity, then the chances are practically 100% that we will be carrying a burden of sinful reactions with us, you know, that eventually weighs us down and crushes us. This is what happens in this Kali Yuga. There's no training. People have no idea of Brahminical culture or Shastra, and so it's a very dangerous age in that way. So what to do? If we want to practice devotional service, we have to understand, we have to come to the sinless platform. Yesham dvandakatam papam jananam punyakamanam te dvandamohaniya muktabhajantayam ham jiravata. If one wants to worship Krishna with strong vow, dhrita vrata, seriously, then antakatam papam, all the papa, the sin, has to be ended, and one has to be performing only pious activities. Then you can have the spiritual strength to actually practice yoga, bhakti yoga. So how to come to that point? Do we have to perform an ashramedha sacrifice? Do we have to perform severe penances and austerities and go off to the Himalayas and all these things? No. The wonderful thing about bhakti yoga is that just by this chanting, you not only become sinless, but you progress very nicely on the path to pure love for God, which is the ultimate goal of this process. So, once again, Prabhupada quoted a couple of verses here. This verse I quoted yesterday. These are important for us to understand the whole situation that we find ourselves in, and what is it that we find is impeding us in our devotional service. So it's a result of our association, result of our previous activities, that has given us a mind that is so saturated with desires for sense gratification, or a mind that is so difficult to focus on the holy name. These are all results of previous activities. So understanding the very powerful purificatory power, energy or function of the holy name is very nice. You know, that's an encouragement to chant. That's an encouragement to chant very sincerely. Because Prabhupada mentions here, there's various offenses. If you think, yes, I can just get rid of the holy, my sins by chanting Hare Krishna, and I can go on sinning, you know, then that's a very dangerous mentality. Sometimes it's said that's the greatest offense. And what happens, practically speaking, because we've seen devotees who get off and they may fall back into some of the previous activities that they were doing, and yet still, you know, want to be involved in devotional service and chant. You lose the taste for the holy name. You can't maintain it. We can only chant. You can only do something if there's some taste to it. For some time. You may chant for 5 minutes, but if you're going to chant for hours, if you're going to chant seriously, then you have to feel Krishna's reciprocation. The holy name has to be enlivening to you. Otherwise, it becomes practically unbearable. So that's a gift of Krishna. And if you are trying to cheat by performing sinful activities, violating the four regulative principles, and at the same time chant, it becomes very, very difficult to chant. You know, what happens is that you find out, you know, just your need to maintain, because you're not going to be able to live amongst devotees, you know, is so great that you don't have time to chant. There's so many more important things. You know, there's no time to go to the temple. That's Krishna who's keeping you apart from devotees. But those who are really so happy to be amongst the association of devotees, when the mridanga plays and the kartals ring, you know, their hearts leap with joy and they love to, you know, oh, the kirtan is about to happen. This is Krishna's gift. This is from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, from Lord Nityananda. That enlivenment of about chanting the holy name. That only comes when you make an effort to, you know, to restrain the senses and not perform any kind of sinful activity. So that's a basis. Now, that's not the goal of the chanting, but that's a basis and a great benefit of chanting the holy name of Krishna. Now again, that verse from Haridas Thakur, or the one he quoted in an assembly of Raghunath Das Goswami was there as a boy, and his father, and the Majumdar, and Govardhan Majumdar, and Hiranya Majumdar. Hiranya means gold, so you know they're very wealthy. So they were having a discussion, but they were devotees, and they were having a discussion on the holy name. And Haridas Thakur was there. What greater opportunity? You know, they were in this circle. So Haridas said, liberation is a byproduct of chanting. Now liberation and, you know, sinful reaction go hand in hand. In other words, what you're getting liberated from are your sinful reactions. What you're getting liberated from is having to take another birth in order to continue to enjoy or suffer your reactions to your karma. So he's saying that all of that, including freedom from sinful reaction, freedom from pious reaction, is a byproduct of the holy name. And there was one Brahmin there who was what we call a smarta Brahmin. Doesn't mean he was very smart. It means he was too involved in the smriti regulations and he didn't understand the essence of the Vedas. That's a smarta Brahmin. So he disputed this. He insulted Haridas Thakur. Said that can't be true. Because those who are not bhaktas, they struggle so hard to achieve this liberation. Imagine if you didn't have the holy name and the deities and the prasadam and the association, and all you had was your knowledge that you're a pure spirit and not this matter and not this body. But you're still in the body, and the body has so many impulses, the body has so many desires, and those are keeping you bound to this world. So what do you do with them? Just by the strength of your intellect and your will of performing severe austerities, you try to burn out those desires. Is that a very good prospect? None of us. I couldn't do it. You know. So this is the impersonalist. And if you go down that road, you feel, you know, compelled to denigrate the bhaktas who are claiming that, oh, you made a big mistake. You made a big mistake. All this suffering you're undergoing to try to get liberation, just chant Hare Krishna and you'll be liberated. Yeah, you know, these sentimentalists. You see what I'm saying? You've just committed yourself, you know, to like 10 years of hard struggle for some goal. And someone else says, oh, if you just go around this way, you'll be able to, you know. No, you can't. So that was his attitude. So he said, if it's not true, and it's not true, I'll cut off your nose. You know, he said that the Haridas Thakur. And everybody jumped up. They were aghast that, you know, such an exalted soul as Haridas would receive, you know, such an insult. So they kicked this guy out. They said, you're fired. He was a tax collector. And they fired him from their employ. And they asked Haridas to explain this verse, this statement of his. So he quoted this verse from the Padyavali. I don't think he composed it. But he says, Anghak sanghata takilang sakududi yade vasakala lokasya. Tadaniti vatamila jala ding jayajit mangalang hare nama. Very nice verse. And then he explained the verse. In the text of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he explains the verse. So I took the verse and the explanation, I put it into a little poem. So, you want to hear this, Hari Kumar. So he says, when the moon is invisible, withered to nil, and the sun is long gone from the sky, then the ocean of darkness envelops this world, and the timorous fear they might die. But that thick pall of gloom is at once swept away when the first signs of sunrise appear, and the dawning of day gives assurance to all that in truth there is nothing to fear. In a similar way, when illusion holds sway, and a soul has forgotten his Lord, then the darkness of ignorance covers his heart. Sin and suffering are his reward. But as soon as he chants Krishna's name even once, in a manner that doesn't offend, then his ignorance flees like the darkness at dawn, and his sin and his suffering end. So there's nothing to fear, for the Son of the Name has appeared with his powers divine. In your heart, may that Son, benedictive for all, become fixed and eternally shine. So this is the purport of Haridas Thakur. So the little abhas, this is called nam abhas, means the reflection or the hint of the sunshine. You know, we've all seen the sunrise. So before the sun rises, the sky gets a little lighter, and gradually you see the rays of the sun over the horizon. So that's called abhas, nam abhas. So the sun of the name is meant to rise in our hearts and shine very brightly. But even before it does, that glow, you know, the reflection of the pure chanting, eliminates all darkness, eliminates all sin, eliminates all ignorance. So this is the benediction of the holy name. Now, Rupa Goswami in his Namashtika, he describes like that. He says, Yada Bhaso, this word Abhas, Yada Bhaso Pyudyan Kavalita Bhava Dwanda Vibhavo. Dusham tat vandhanam abhidhishati bhakti pranahinim. Janastasyo datam jagati bhagavan nama tadane kuti teni vaktum yayam himanam pababati. Who, even if he's very learned, great devotee, could possibly completely describe your glories, O holy name? Because, O son of the holy name, because, like S-U-N, of this holy name. Because just as you're rising over the horizon, you swallow up the prowess of the darkness of illusion. Dwanta vibhava. Dwanta means the power of darkness. Maya is very powerful. After all, she's a servant of Krishna. She's a Shakti of Krishna. If we disconnect ourselves from Krishna by forgetting him, then we're going to be controlled completely by Maya. She'll cover our knowledge. That's what's happened. The only hope is to turn to the Son of Krishna, and he can dissipate this fog of Maya. So that's what he said. And just imagine yourself now in a deep, dark, frightening forest or jungle at night. You know, you can't, even if there is a path out of it, you can't see it. And so you're very afraid. This is our situation in this world. We're in a jungle, a forest of birth and death, and we have no way out. We don't see the way out. Just like Krishna describes in the 15th chapter, that banyan tree, a huge banyan tree with so many branches and so many roots, and we're trying to make our way through. Maybe this is the way. Okay, I'll go that way. But you never get out that way. You have to cut it down. So in this other analogy, you're in this dark jungle at night, you know. But then gradually, the sun comes up, and you see that there's this path out of the jungle. So you're very thankful to the sun. Thank you for showing me the path. And you get out of the jungle. So similarly, the sun of the holy name shows the path of bhakti to those who are blinded by ignorance and are in this jungle. So this is the second line. So this is what we experience. You know, if you chant Hare Krishna, Krishna draws you to him. You become interested in the Sangha, in reading the books, in seeing the deity, in chanting. If you don't chant Hare Krishna, then the Maya can come cover you, and 10 years later you say, oh yeah, I remember, I used to go to the Hare Krishna temple. It's the son of the holy name that is keeping you connected, you know, and we should always remember that. So therefore, Rupa Goswami glorifies the holy name in that way as the light, you know, the brilliant Krishna himself, Krishna Surya Sama. Krishna is like the sun, darkness is like ignorance. Where the Krishna's sun shines, darkness has no sway, it cannot affect you. Similarly, when the son of the name is being chanted loudly and we're hearing and we're relishing, then Maya cannot touch. You're protected. It's protection of the holy name, the shelter. So apparently Indra did not take shelter of the holy. He did not join the Hare Krishna movement at this time. And instead, he relied on the demigods to practice that Ashwamedha sacrifice. So Ashwamedha sacrifice, you know, you keep hearing about it. It literally means they sacrifice a horse, you know, which, you know, devotees would never do that. I mean, I wouldn't even, it kind of makes your skin crawl. But there's a way of doing it, you know, that's somehow pious, and it creates some pious credit. But chanting Hare Krishna, chanting the holy name is much more effective, and there's no downside. There's no, you know, the poor horse doesn't have to, you know, sacrifice his life, so you can be free of sin. It's all auspicious, the chanting. It's, you know, it spreads the rays of the benediction moon. You know, this is the sacrifice of the age. So, again, the overall lesson of this section is multifold. Don't offend the spiritual master. Be very deferential to genuine Brahmins. A real Brahmin is a Vaishnav. Brahmajanan iti Brahmanaha. You have to know Brahman. And who is the supreme Brahman? Krishna. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma. So if someone who really knows Krishna, who's a devotee of Krishna, is automatically supposed to be a Brahman. Now, we should also try to cultivate the Brahminical qualities as Vaishnavs, cleanliness, self-control, all those things, read about them. But if we're genuine Vaishnavs, those will come naturally to us and we'll be very eager to, you know, cultivate those qualities. So that's the idea. And if we're Brahminical, then, you know, don't offend exalted personalities, because it'll cause you great trouble, like we did here. And in order to keep ourselves sinless and eradicate any previous sinful reactions, then chant the holy name, practice devotional service. One more nice sloka about burning the karma. You know, this is Lord Brahma he's describing. Everybody, it's very appropriate. We're talking about Indra. Yastvindra gopam atavendra aho swakarma bandhana rupa palabhajana matanoti. Karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajam. I worship Govinda, the prime of the Lord. Now, all the way from Indra down to the Indra gopa germ, some little parasite, every living entity, every organism, if you will, is suffering or enjoying, is bound up by the results of their karma. But this Govinda, Krishna, karmani nidahati kinchita bhakti bhajam, those who are worshipping Govinda with bhakti, he burns to ashes. Karmani nidahati. Nidahati means completely burned, so that nothing can fructify. You burn a seed, it will not fructify. Right? So the seeds of karma, of sin, and, you know, pious seeds, also, they will be burned. Karmani nidahati kinchita bhakti bhajam, Govinda Madhipurusha. I worship Govinda. So this is the way that we can escape the web of action-reaction. As Prabhupada said in his immortal words, the chain victimization, you know, of self-created duties and sin and all of this business. It's very, very complicated. You can't untangle it. You have to cut it wholesale. You have to cleanse it away wholesale by the powerful tivrena bhakti, by intense devotional service. Okay, any discussion on these points? Manaji? Please, speak up. I'm sorry?
If it's entangled with this simple reaction, I have experiences with, like, something similar to that, like in the past. I could get caught up in negativity that goes on in the temple.
Uh-huh.
So even though I'm trying to chant sincerely and do my service, I still get caught up in, you know, in entanglements with negativity, but, you know, problems that goes on in the temple. So how do you,
Well, it's a question of avoiding the talk and taking a proactive view of always chanting the glories of the Lord. And this is why we have so many shlokas. If you're doing your service while you're chanting Hare Krishna, or something, you know, some song from the songbook, or some verse from the books glorifying Krishna, you won't be caught up in the negativity. You will be a force for positivity all around you. Whoever comes into your orbit, they'll want to know, what are you singing? And you'll be able to explain the song. And be able to, you need to, the only weapon we have, really, is transcendental sound. And as Vaisheshika Prabhu is always saying, keep the transcendental sound vibrating, you know. Don't let it end. So if you cultivate, you know, I remember, you know, of course, I've always been into memorizing. And memorizing is important. There's a the longest purport in the Bhagavatam is in the seventh canto. When Prahlad, he sings his verse, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam, he's answering his father. He gives the nine processes of devotional service. And then Prabhupada explains each one, and he quotes extensively from Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. So in that description of Smaranam, remembrance, there's a statement about the importance of memorizing. You know, that's clearly an intense remembrance. If you memorize something, you know, then you can recall it when you need it, you know, and it helps to focus the mind on Krishna. So I highly recommend that, even if it's just some little verse, like just, like for instance, this is prayer to Krishna from Queen Kunti. Beautiful prayers in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavatam. Trayime anandi vishaya mati madupate sakrit rata mudbhatara dha gange vaugamadanvati. I put it into English. O Madhava, please ever fill my mind with thoughts of thee, not any other kind. As Ganges torrent flows into the sea, let all my love flow constantly to thee. Now you can put in Gopinath. O Gopinath, please ever fill my mind with thoughts of thee. You see? So the prayer, we're praying. When you chant Hare Krishna, you're actually praying to Krishna. Right? We should be feeling that, have that prayerful mood, which Prabhupada recommends. That please engage me in your service. We know that. But also it helps to articulate, you know, established prayers and also your own prayers. Please, Gopinath, Radha Gopinath, let me not get caught up today, at least, in all of this negativity in the temple. Let me just stay, you know, remembering your lotus feet and enlivened and enlightened by remembrance of you and glorification of you. They'll answer that prayer, you know. So there's no one formula. You have to steer clear of the negative energy. If someone is speaking ill of devotees, and you know, kick them out of the temple, or just steer clear. And if you become a positive force for Krishna nectar. We have such a flood of nectar. You know, this Bhagavatam is filled with so many beautiful descriptions of Krishna. If we make just a few of them, your own. You know, I remember when I first saw Prabhupada back in April of 1973. He came to Brooklyn. I just joined the temple. I didn't know anything. You know, I thought this happens all the time. You join the temple and the spiritual master comes. Little did I know that there's devotees, there were devotees then in the movement who never really got to see Prabhupada. He didn't go to South America very much, you know. So he came to Brooklyn and he was speaking on these prayers of Queen Kunti. And so I was enlivened to, you know, look those prayers up. And there was this simple little verse, you know. Wonderful. Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya cha Nanda Gopakumaraya Govindaya Namo Namaha. Again and again I offer my obeisance unto, you know, you can offer that to the deity. Just names of Krishna. Unto you, O Krishna, Krishnaya Vasudeva Devaki Nandanaya. Practically don't even need a translation. You know? Why not? You know, it fills, and then the idea is that each one of those names has so much in it. You know, Krishnaya. I mean, you could speak for 1,000 years on the meaning of the word Krishna. Why? How is Krishna all attractive? You know, it opens up everything. Form, qualities, name, pastimes of Krishna. Vasudevaya. Okay, you're the son of Vasudeva. You can remember that pastime, you see? The verses are very rich. But a simple verse. You make it your own, and then you offer it to Krishna, and there you see beautiful Krishna smiling back at you. And next time you see somebody in the temple, Prabhu, or O friend, you want to hear a nice shloka? You know? And all, you know, there's no negativity. It's all positive. Now, of course, you know, it may sound like I'm not taking it seriously, because there are issues in any temple, you know, management and who's going to serve what, who's going to do what, and who's going to sleep where, whatever, you know, there's all practical things. But all of that becomes easy to handle when everyone is Krishna conscious, when they're enlivened in Krishna consciousness, and when you're helping each other become Krishna conscious. That's the meaning of having an ashram, of a temple. Otherwise, what's the point of living together and working together, trying to sustain all this? Is that you're helping each other be Krishna conscious. That's why the environment is, you know, is supposed to be so purifying. So that's about all I can give on that, Manaji. I hope to help. Hare Krishna. Any other discussion? Ananda Gauranga Prabhu.
The rishis said that when they perform Aswamedha sacrifice, then even the sinful reactions of killing the entire universe or entire world goes away. So is that not true when this lady with the devotee knows his name? So that's not a true statement?
Well, you know, all we can say is it didn't seem to work for him. He still felt that way, that he was, you know, encouraged by the words, by them. Indra killed Vritrasura, and when he was killed, the sinful reaction of killing it took shelter of him. And then he says, and he suffered. Although the other demigods were happy, he could not derive happiness from the killing of Vritrasura. Indra's other good qualities, such as tolerance and opulence, could not help him in his grief. So, you know, maybe it didn't work. I don't know. But whatever they did, you know, it's like, go ahead, you do it. We'll take care of it. And he did it. He said, thanks a lot. Now we're going back to our planets now. See you later. I mean, it's apparently that's what happened. You know, which is also instructive. It means that don't take shelter of any of these karmakanda stuff. You know, Krishna at the beginning of Gita, in the second chapter, Yami Mam Pushpitam Vacham, Pavadantya Vipashtata. He's talking about how those who are so-called knowers of the Vedas, they praise the karmakanda section, which is Ashtamedha's part of it, and so many other sacrifices, as that all there is. You do this and you get this. You get, you know, it's really based on selfish desire. You know, there's a place for that, you know, in the Vedas. And the idea is there'll be some worship of Vishnu and you'll gradually get purified, you know. But it's not for us. It's definitely not for us Kali Yugites. We'll never be able to perform it properly. And even if we succeed and get some good karma from it, it's not going to solve our problems. You know, we'll still have to come back again to this situation. So this seems to have been a miscommunication or whatever, you know. I mean, there's also the factor of, okay, they'll perform the Ashwamedha sacrifice, but they didn't perform it perfectly. You know, it wasn't performed with proper pronunciation, the Brahmins, it was, who knows. Whatever it was, you know, if you read the subsequent verses, it didn't work. And eventually he's freed by the grace of Lakshmi, apparently. And you know, all this stuff happens. Nahusha, you know, he gets involved with his wife. And then it says, and finally in text 17, looking ahead, Indra's sins were diminished by the influence of Rudra, demigod, because Indra was protected by the goddess of fortune, so he was taking shelter of the lake. Vishnu's wife, who resides in the lotus, Indra's sins could not affect him. He was ultimately relieved of all reactions of his sinful deeds by strictly worshipping Vishnu. Then he was called back to the heavenly planets by the Brahmins and reinstated in his position. You know, so eventually, that's 1,000 years later. We don't have that much time, you know. And it's a very slow process, you know. We need a wholesale process by which we can be purified as quickly as possible so that we can be eligible to actually practice bhakti. And that's the Sankirtan movement. That's the Sankirtan movement. Lord Chaitanya's come, a high, low, you know, Kirata Hunanda. These are all different races all over the world. Like the Hunas are the Huns. Those are the Germans. The Khasas are the Chinese, you know, and such races. They're all outside of India, you know, and they have various levels of sinful activity. But even them, they can become purified. And that's why we're sitting here. Most of us, some of us take birth in India. But we belong to some of those races. But by the grace of the, you know, Krishna, we can become pure. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.